Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time listening to the Guelph Politicast, welcome. Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe on iTunes. Today I talk to Michael Druker, an executive member of TriTag, or the Tri-Cities Transport Action Group. We have a lot to talk about in regards to alternative transportation initiatives in the region and how what's going on in Waterloo region might apply to us here in Guelph. And we will get to all that in a minute, but first, my usual public service message. Recently, I launched the Patreon campaign for Guelph Politico. Through Patreon, you can contribute on a per-monthly basis of any amount you feel comfortable using PayPal or your credit card. And all that money goes to maintaining a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph called Guelph Politico. Through your generous donations, you will be paying to keep the Politicast going, as well as regular coverage of city council and politics in and around and concerning the Royal City. For more details, click on the giant orange P on the right-hand side of the Guelph Politico page, or go to patreon.com/Guelph Politico. Now that that's out of the way, we'll go on with the show. Now, you've probably heard a lot about the construction of the ION, the Light Rail Transport, or LRT, that is currently underway in Kitchener-Waterloo. When completed, it will connect Waterloo and Cambridge through Kitchener via high-speed train. The project is massive and is the result of decades of planning and coordination between various levels of government. But aside from the ION, which TriTag wholeheartedly supports, obviously, the group also has its eyes on Grand River Transit's existing bus system and Waterloo Region's efforts to create more bike lanes and paths across the Tri-Cities. So we touch on all that during the course of my conversation, plus I ask Michael about the challenges of promoting transit use, whether or not the negatives of constructing the LRT have been overpromoted, and whether we can all work together, people who live in Waterloo Region and Guelph, perhaps developing some kind of intra-city transit system. And we'll also talk about TriTag's dedication to encourage not just alternative transportation, but to encourage traveling with dignity. So I caught up with Michael by phone from his home in Kitchener, Waterloo. Michael Druker, thank you for taking time to talk to me today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about TriTag as an organization and how it came about.
So TriTag, which is the Tri-Cities Transport Action Group, was founded in 2009, initially to help advocate for the approval of the light rail transit system for Waterloo Region. Mm-hmm. But we've since continued as an advocacy organization for better walking, biking, and transit within Waterloo Region as a whole. And that's what we've been doing. So we advocate for practical approaches to improving conditions for walking, biking, and transit, for changes to policy within the region.
Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't, I mean, obviously, as you said, the big goal was to get the ION going, which is the light rail transit system currently under construction. But you guys have been doing a lot lately about biking and
yeah.
That kind of.
So the one of the reasons is that biking is a really great opportunity. So there's relatively little biking in terms of the modal share, the percentage of trips that are made by bike in our area. But a bike is a great way to cover, let's say, a medium distance trip, something that's a little bit beyond what you might do by on foot, but something for which a bike could be competitive with driving. Mm-hmm. So there's, in a place that's a little bit, you know, less dense than large cities like Toronto or Vancouver or New York or such, the ability to go longer distances is really important if we want to make to help make it possible for people to switch away from the private automobile. So people want to bike. The surveys show that people are quite keen on being able to bike to work, to the shop, and that kind of thing, but they're not comfortable doing it on the kind of infrastructure that that our cities have. And so the idea is that if we provide better infrastructure, better support for biking, then a lot more people are going to do it. Because there's just such high demand for it.
That survey you're referring to, I think half of the people that responded said that their preferred route to travel by bike didn't have the infrastructure, and that means like even just the painted bike lanes, not necessarily separated bike lanes. It's just maybe or maybe too dangerous for them to comfortably ride their bike.
Well, that's the thing, especially in Waterloo region. There's not a lot of redundancy in the road network, and a lot, especially as you get into the more suburban, the post-war built areas, there are the streets that are winding and don't necessarily connect with anything, and then there are the arterial roads which do connect, but which carry a lot of traffic, a lot of fast traffic, and are unpleasant places to be if you're on a bike. And so those are exactly the places where you need to be to get somewhere. At the same time, you need to be protected from the roadway to feel comfortable doing so.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to touch on something else that on your website. It's not enough for TriTech to try and encourage people to take transit. There's also a caveat in there that you want people to be able to travel with transit with dignity. Could you describe what that means?
It's about perspective, and it's about designing transportation not for them, but for us, for our community. It's not something that, well, if we just give them this route, then they should be happy.
Right.
But it's about what's your experience there? Are you packed like sardines in this bus? Are you getting are you getting passed by because the bus is too full? If you're walking, are you having to climb over packed snow? Are you having to walk carefully over ice because the snow clearing policy is not really working well because it's designed for the property owner to deal with it and the property owner doesn't? If it's biking, are the bike lanes cleared in the winter? Are the bike lanes actually safe to be in? Are they do delivery vehicles park in the bike lanes? I mean, all of these things, they're about the entire experience of using these. Is it possible for people to get around consistently, or does whenever the going gets hard for the municipality, do they say, well, we tried, but we're not gonna carry through? So if there's construction, well, sorry, your bike infrastructure is gone, or your sidewalk is gone. And so dignity means actually dealing with the full situation. So if there's construction, you root around. You care about the people using that infrastructure, using that travel mode.
It's an interesting thing to consider because so much about public transportation is about the congestion in the actual, like if you think about Toronto and the downtown subway routes at rush hour and how they're packed in like sardines, or the streetcars. And it's even a bit of a joke sometimes. You see these videos from Japan or Taiwan where the guards on the platform are literally pushing people inside the train so the doors can shut.
There can be infrastructure limits about what is possible to carry by various modes without X amount of extreme infrastructure investment. Well, we're definitely not there. And it's even a relative thing. When you have you look at a transit budget, you look at the portion of that comes from property taxes, the portion of that comes from fares, which is a big chunk, and a tiny chunk that comes from ads. But those ads, some of them, are plastered over the windows of the bus. And so that tiny amount of revenue is coming at the expense of the quality of the experience of the people riding in the bus. They can't see, they can't see out of the bus. Sometimes it makes you a little bit more car sick on the way. And and that it's about these trade-offs.
And it's tricky, too, because I know from deliberations here in Guelph, there are some people who point out, you got to find ways to take the stress off the taxpayer-supported budget, and that would include, things like advertising that even though...
Well,
go ahead.
It's not an unreasonable point in general, mm-hmm. but you need to consider just how much are you getting with those ads, and how much are you hurting the travel mode. So ideally, and these are in the region of Waterloo, these are municipal goals. Municipal goals relate to getting a lot more people taking transit.
Mm-hmm.
That is a goal. That is something that there's a lot of work being done to do that. And so if you're really trying to get more people taking transit, which in turn actually allows you to make the transit system more efficient
mm-hmm.
and require less operating subsidy. But if you're doing that, you need to be designing an experience that people like. You want people not just to use transit tomorrow and for tomorrow the revenues to be higher. You want that for the medium term, for the long term. And if you do that, you need to care about the experience, and you need to make it so that the people riding that bus
mm-hmm.
don't want to quit riding when they get the first opportunity. And so mm-hmm. And even currently, the fares bring in, I think, 100 times more revenue than do ads. And so if you are costing a few percentage of ridership through ads that are hurting the experience,
mm-hmm.
then you're not actually winning anything, even revenue-wise. Certainly revenue is a factor, but you need to think about these things in context and over the medium term as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, Waterloo Region is making a pretty big push to get more people on transit with the ION. And there was actually a Toronto Star article, I'm sure you saw it this past December, where it was praising the region, whereas in Toronto, things seem to be constantly stalled in terms of constructing light rail. From the Waterloo Region point of view, is the picture as rosy as the Star painted it, how do you see it?
We certainly have our share of issues, but we have, with this project in particular, there has been a pretty strong sense of purpose
mm-hmm.
At the regional government level, and quite a while. I mean, this project has been in the books for essentially a few decades in some form,
mm-hmm.
But it started in earnest in the early 2000s, made more formal mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Took its few years going through all the environmental assessments. There was an election in there. There were some tweaks, and then eventually it got approved, and it had tweaks in the procurement process. And now that that's happening, it's full steam ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And there has not been the there's not really been the back and forth on, well, we're going to do it. Oh no, we're not going to do it. And mm-hmm. And part of that is because it isn't like with some of the Greater Toronto Area municipalities recently. It's not about, well, what can we get out of the upper level government? Because
right.
it has been driven. It hasn't. The initiative did not come from the other levels of government. It came from the our government,
right.
And they were willing to put in a piece of the funding.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a history of that as well. So the commonly cited example is the Conestoga Expressway, which was built in the early 70s by Kitchener-Waterloo, which put in a substantial chunk of the cost of that,
right.
with the rest of it being supported by the province. But at that time, it was built as forward-thinking infrastructure for the future, which was a little bit of a novel idea at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, that's been proven quite a good idea. The Waterloo Region is quite happy to have it, and other municipalities are envious that Waterloo Region built it, while they sort of considered something along those lines and never really did agree to do it. And so that's a bit of a, I think, useful comparison.
Mm-hmm.
The light rail project here is the same kind of thing. It isn't infrastructure for right now. It's infrastructure for the future, for a decade, for two decades from now. Designed to build the city around it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain sense of purpose with something like that, and with a plan that's guided very much by land use objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just, it's not about alleviating current overcrowding on some specific route. It is about what kind of community do we want to live in?
Right.
And do we want to preserve the countryside? And are we able to preserve our water supply? And these are some of the interrelated questions that have been pretty core to Waterloo Region policy for even the last few decades.
Mm-hmm. But still, having said that, I mean, I think of the, looking back on the 2014 municipal election, I think all but one of the mayoral candidates had part of their platform, or if not the entirety of their platform, was about revisiting the construction and having a referendum to decide. I mean, it is interesting that it's an incredibly forward-thinking project, but it was tried to be held back by a very large group of people.
And I think ultimately the numbers have shown that they're both, certainly there has been opposition and loud opposition and angry opposition,
mm-hmm.
but there have also been politicians willing to stand up for what they believe in, and that being something that may not have that kind of immediate visceral appeal of cancel the things and less taxes and all that kind of stuff, but actually articulating a vision and hewing to that vision, and that's actually been supported. So that has gotten support from voters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that is certainly a part of it. So there have been both the politicians that are able and willing to make that kind of stand,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the decisions, and then the public that's willing to support it. And I think there is some local political culture component to that I may not have the best explanation for.
Well, part of that, though, and it, from my outsider's perspective, I want to get your perspective as an insider, is I watch the local news from CTV Kitchener, and it seems like once a week there's like some kind of construction horror story about, I mean, they might as well call it what's gone wrong with construction this week as like a regular feature or something. It just, it seems like this project has a bit more of a harsh spotlight on it than perhaps any infrastructure project, if there was a rink being built somewhere or a new mall or something.
So I think there's several factors that are driving that. I mean, one, all of those make for great press,
mm-hmm.
But it is a very disruptive infrastructure project. It's being built quickly because that actually is how you reduce overall disruption and reduce mm-hmm. costs and realize the benefits. But because of how central this route is going through all of the central parts of Kitchener-Waterloo, and we don't have much redundancy in our street network.
Right.
That means that it is going to disrupt a lot of places along the way, and any large infrastructure project has complications. You discover infrastructure that you didn't know about underneath the street, which happened in a number of places in downtown Kitchener, that you then need to deal with, or there's just something is not exactly as planned. And there's always some component of that. The reason overall this is being so disruptive is just that it is touching a lot of places. It is probably the most disruptive infrastructure project that Waterloo Region has had and probably will have,
mm-hmm.
Because you can't affect as many things as this. Certainly, when the highway was being built, it was not that this disruptive, just because it was on the edge of town.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is that is less clear to people is that the really disruptive part of light rail construction is the rebuilding of the street. So the rebuilding of the infrastructure under the street to move it out of the way of the light rail, or to make it accessible for while the light rail is operating, it requires completely tearing out all of those underground utilities, the water, sewer, stormwater, all of that stuff, and moving it, and
mm-hmm.
so reconstructing it. That's the really disruptive part. It's disruptive if a street is being reconstructed normally for regular maintenance purposes, but this just means there's 19 kilometers. Like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of people in Guelph here sort of look at the Grand River Transit System as an example of good progress in terms of making a better transit system here. So I'm not going to ask you to compare transit systems because you're probably not an expert in terms of Guelph transit, but in terms of from your own observations in the GRT bus routes right now, what are they doing right, and is there still room for improvement on?
That's a big one. So I mean the biggest thing that was done right in Grand River Transit originally is the creation of Grand River Transit. So Grand River Transit was created in the early 2000s by uploading Kitchener Transit and Cambridge Transit to the region of Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a recommendation out of a regional transportation master plan, which, going back to that vision for ION, was about shifting trips to transit, and the idea was that the way that the region can affect that the most is by operating a consolidated system into which it can then invest. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it's been doing. They've invested. They added more funding to GRT. They added more operating hours, more routes. They added Sunday service in places that didn't have it, and they're still doing that incrementally. Adding service mm-hmm. has increased ridership. It's a surprise, but that's been a broader trend. More specifically, the next most important thing they did was they piloted the first iExpress, which I think was started in 2004,
mm-hmm.
and that is the precursor to ION. But it was a new route to act as a limited stop service along the central transit corridor
mm-hmm.
To build up demand for rapid transit,
mm-hmm.
and it's done that quite well. One of the more recent initiatives has been the creation of more iExpress routes, which are mostly limited stop services with their own branding, which are corridor services.
Right,
they are services that are intended to be fast and to go across town. And so we're now up to, so the iExpress was rebranded to iExpress 200, and we're now up to iExpress 204.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these have been quite successful. And the general plan that the region has been, Grand River Transit has been working towards, is the restructuring of the transit network to be based more around a grid system.
Right.
So with the light rail as the backbone, as the center line, there is less need and less value from taking buses all to one hub.
Mm-hmm.
For transfers, and we can use the light rail system as the way to transfer from multiple routes. So this system would be based on grid lines across the light rail system and parallel to the light rail system, to the extent that that's possible with our street network,
mm-hmm.
and that allows for some efficiency, for some rationalization of routes. And they've been doing these rationalizations incrementally.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll take some portion of Kitchener and add an iExpress route, see what service is now made redundant, move some of that service elsewhere, try to straighten out some routes, and when possible, move to corridor service rather than winding service that is not that appealing to people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been the idea. They've not been super quick about this. So this is something that some communities like Houston have done in one go, completely organize the system so that you can see not just the route that was taken away in your area,
right.
or the stop that was taken away in your area, but you can see the benefit throughout the system as part of that as well. And that's been a bit of a challenge,
right.
but they've done a good job with the restructurings that they have done so far. But there's more, let's say, work and pain that's going to have to happen to do the same thing for the central routes, the routes 7 and 8, which are basically they need some rationalization with the light rail and general usability of the system. So that's generally where they're at. We don't yet have a solid frequent service network.
Right.
Something that you would be able to have a number of lines going with service every, let's say, 10 or 15 minutes or less.
Right.
Right now, it's all scheduled. It's all, and then even on routes that have relatively frequent service, I'm specifically thinking of the 7,
mm-hmm.
there's still based on scheduled times, and so you don't have headway based routing. You don't have a goal of the route that the buses come every 10 minutes. So what instead happens is that the buses are scheduled, but some bus lags behind, and the more it lags behind, the more people are waiting for it, the more people get on, the further it lags behind, and the more the next bus after it catches up. And so you get these platoons of multiple buses, meaning that effectively you have less frequent service.
Right.
So that's the kind of problem that cities like Toronto experience, but we are also experiencing it here. But Grand River Transit has not yet moved any routes to scheduling that allows for that to be remedied.
And Tri-Tag's also focused on intercity transit, particularly the GO Transit service and those kinds of services. But there's been talk here in the last election about having some kind of team-up. It's never really been clear what that could look like between Guelph Transit and GRT, especially when you think the furthest west stop on the Guelph Transit and the distance from there to the furthest east stop on the GRT is probably about 15 minutes. Is there been any thoughts about that from Tri-Tag?
It's something that we've definitely been interested in. We haven't pursued any specific initiatives on our end. I am aware that the subject keeps coming up from both the city of Guelph and the region of Waterloo. Mm-hmm. My understanding is everyone is generally interested in the idea of some kind of connection or better connections between Kitchener and Guelph and between Cambridge and Guelph. And there are some possibilities of how that could work, but there hasn't really been a champion for these. There's some kind of larger regional transportation strategy that's being developed by multiple municipalities. I do not recall the name of this initiative, but I think one of its potential outcomes could be the recommendation of specific intercity service. I think there's also a bit of the expectation or the assumption that GO Transit will come in and fill that gap.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that will happen, but right now it's very much a gap. Intercity transit is harder than transit within a municipality.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of provincial regulation.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the barriers might be too is there's a lot of empty space between Guelph and Cambridge and Guelph and Kitchener versus someplace like Mississauga and Toronto and Brampton where there's less empty space in between. Let me just maybe wrap up by asking you to consider this question. It's something I ask everybody when we talk about transit issues. How do we convince people to get out of their cars? Because it just seems to me everyone agrees that there's congestion. Everyone agrees that there's too many cars on the road. But it also seems that nobody wants to be the first one to give up their own car in order to take the bus or the Ion or the TTC or whatever.
I don't think you need to necessarily get people to give up their cars, but you want people to try transit, and the things that you want to do are you want to make transit more attractive, you want it to be more competitive. Ideally, you want transit to be faster,
mm-hmm.
And as well as cheaper to use. But part of it is also just better information. So you want transit to be understandable. If you have a route structure that nobody can understand, if you don't give people a sense of whether they can rely on the system, then they will have less trust in the system, and maybe they will try it, but they will be confused and they will have a bad experience, and then they won't try it again for many more years.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, if you give them access to real-time location of the buses, good maps that show clearly where they can expect frequent service, so that they're aware that they happen to live close to a really good network.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe some people happen to live in places where it's going to be always a challenge to pick transit over a personal car, for example,
mm-hmm.
just because it's in the middle of some subdivision where no good transit is going to be able to run frequently. But some people they're already well served by transit, and so for them, it's about the information. It's about presenting routes and schedules in a way that is much more understandable. So one of a really simple manifestation of that is if the service on a particular street is consolidated.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than having five different routes that travel the same street and then branch out somewhere else, if you're able to have a network that has just the one route that travels on that street, and the bus comes every 5 minutes instead of five different buses that coming every half an hour or something. What you can then say is you can show the buses that say route number 15, Frederick or something, and mm-hmm. they are traveling on Frederick Street, for example, or whatever your major corridor is. If you're able to do that, then people who are walking there, people who are driving there, they see all these buses that say Route 15 Frederick.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get used to the idea that this is actually frequent service, that they're not even exploring the idea of transit, but they get this information passively because the information is so clear. This is one of the points that Jarrett Walker makes in his blog and book Human Transit, which mm-hmm. is a really good read on these subjects. But information is key. Quality of service is key.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have frequent service, even more importantly than fast service, because frequency determines so much about your trip.
Mm-hmm.
How much time do you have to spend at the beginning of your trip waiting for the bus is part of your trip time, or the uncertainty associated with whether the bus is late or earlier or so on. Those are all, and that's a factor that's mitigated as well. You don't need to care if the bus is early or late if the bus comes every 5 minutes,
because mm-hmm.
you're not looking at the schedule anyway. So that's the transit being appealing part. Another aspect is the cost of parking, and so
mm-hmm.
parking is a really important aspect of the current structure that incentivizes people to drive. So our municipalities generally require developments to provide so much parking, and they are required to provide that parking.
Mm-hmm.
They require developers to provide the kind of amount of parking that is impossible to be anything but free.
Mm-hmm.
These numbers are based on measurements of the demand for free parking, and the demand for free parking is higher than the demand for paid parking.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the number that gets written into the zoning codes, and so a new commercial development is put in place, and it's required to have so much parking that there's no sense in trying to charge anyone for it. And so one of the strategies that municipalities should be using is making sure that parking is not overprovided,
mm-hmm.
so that parking can be provided in a market fashion. If that land is better used for something else, if that land is better used to put in more housing units right in the downtown, as opposed to more parking stalls,
mm-hmm.
then that's something that should be possible. And parking should not necessarily be free right in the downtown,
mm-hmm.
Or at high demand destinations. And so the ease with which you decide to drive to somewhere versus taking another mode is affected by what do you do when you get there?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a free parking spot? And certainly if transit costs, $3 to ride and parking is free,
mm-hmm.
that's not a great comparison. Even though there's other costs driving,
mm-hmm.
You don't see those costs on a typical trip.
Right.
So there's a number of strategies, but I think it's about shifting the balance on individual trips. It's not necessarily about getting people to sell their cars or to completely buy into transit. Maybe they take transit once in a while because they understand it well enough, and sometimes they don't need it. Sometimes mm-hmm. they walk, sometimes they bike, sometimes they take transit, sometimes they carpool. And that's all fine, but you want people to experience transit periodically so that they're aware of what is available to them.
Absolutely. Michael, if you wanted maybe tell people where they can get more information about TriTag or follow along with your advocacy efforts.
Sure. So we are at tritag.ca, where you can actually find out more details about a current fundraising campaign we're running with perks of of light rail station buttons, which are excellent. We're also at TriTag on Twitter, and we're on Facebook as well. So check us out.
Michael Druker, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today.
Great. Thanks for having me.
And once again, that was Michael Druker, who is a member of the TriTag executive. To learn more about TriTag, you can go to its website, TRITAG.ca. Sadly, their Ion Station button promotion just ended, but that doesn't mean there aren't other ways for you to connect with them and get involved. Once again, go to TriTag.ca to learn more. And that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The theme for the Guelph Politicast is From the Crazy Pills, and their song Break It Down, which you can find on the Free Music Archive. The host of the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. And you can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. You can reach me through Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. There is also a Guelph Politico Facebook page that you can find at facebook.com/PoliticoGuelph. And of course, you can donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And thank you to everyone who has donated so far. For all the latest local political news, check out Guelph Politico anytime at guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, and we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly, and until then, we will see you next time.